Welcome to the Tell Us Something podcast. I'm Mark Moss, your host. Tell Us Something seeks to celebrate the craft of live storytelling. The Missoula community comes together for a night of shared stories, told live, focused on a theme. Tell Us Something is a quarterly event. Everyone has a story. What's yours? This quarter's Tell Us Something was recorded on March 21st, 2013 at the Top Hat. This edition of Tell Us Something features 10 storytellers telling a story based upon the theme extremes. This week's story comes to us from Jim Ambrose and is titled Leveling My Playing Field. You can learn more about Jim and see what he's been up to at interfaceproject.org. Thank you for listening.
Hello, everyone. Thanks for hanging around. Timer. I'm going to tell you a story about how I went from Baton Rouge, Louisiana to Missoula, Montana. And it's going to be great. I played soccer in college. I got almost a full scholarship to play soccer at a small school in central Illinois. Really competitive Division II program. But for a competitive Division II program, we didn't travel very much. We just stayed in Missouri and Indiana and Wisconsin and stuff. But my freshman year, we went all the way to Clinton, South Carolina. Some Clinton, South Carolina fans in the house? And of course, we took the bus. You know, it was like out of Major League, the bus. I mean, there's stuff falling off of it and everything like that. So we were going to play two teams there, Presbyterian and Catawba. And two teams that were ranked far much higher than we were expected to lose. So we get there, our coaches are in the hotel room, and they're saying, you know, having us visualize, you know, visualize positive things happening, and then they manifest on the field. Well, that's never happened for me, except for this weekend. It was extraordinary. The field was manicured like 1,000 people got down with shears and just were snipping the grass. It was perfect. Will knows what I'm talking about. And the team played well. They played extraordinarily well. And I played out of my mind. And we won both games. It was great. So when the coaches dismiss us, they send us off to the locker room. I'm walking away. I'm feeling great. I'm completely high. Oh, do I need it? Where was I? Oh, yeah. And this big, beefy, officious-looking guy comes up to me, and he was like, you know what? That was an All-American performance. All-American. And I was like, oh, thank you. Thank you very much. And he's like, you know what? We'll be watching. And I don't know what that means at all. But it feels good. Feels great. So I am floating to the locker room, absolutely floating. I get there. I peel off my sopping wet jersey, my disgusting cleats and shin guards, and I hear my teammates, you know, hooping and hollering in the shower. And I tear off, I cut the ankle tape off and make my way to the shower. And I was so high. I mean, I was seeing the world through this incredible artistic athletic lens, you know, like how artists or mathematicians, they see the world through a certain lens. I was seeing it that way and everything felt so great that when I entered this open shower, dyke showers, as they're called, I forgot to avert my eyes. And for the first time, I really noticed how beautiful my teammates were. The water falling off their skin, off their fingertips, their beautiful carved calves, their sturdy thighs, their asses and their abdomens and their tits, so young and supple, their nipples utterly untouched by responsibility, complete bodies toned by discipline and youth. I really forgot myself. But you know, anytime I need to tell a story about my life before the age of 28 or high school, college, elementary school, I always come to a point where I have to remind myself that certain language is inappropriate. Dyke, tits, pussy, bag. They're not appropriate. They're not appropriate coming out of my mouth because they sound, they were disrespectful, they are objectifying, they could be seen as vulgar and hateful, dismissive. There was a time when that language was not only acceptable, but it was encouraged for me. Because there was a time when I did have tits, and I did have a pussy, and I was a dyke, and I had many gay male friends who were my brothers and who I affectionately called fags. There's a story behind that. When I was 12 years old in Baton Rouge, Louisiana, my parents were hosting this cocktail party, not something they normally did. But my mother chose this time to take me into the back room where she, the bedroom where she shared with my father, and sat me on the bed and said, "You were born a hermaphrodite." Hermaphrodite. These were her words. And she told me, "Soon you're going to have to start taking pills to make you look like the other girls, to make you grow breasts, to make you grow taller, to have the typical female fatty deposits." And then she said, "Further down the line, you'll have to have a surgery to complete you so your husband can have sex with you." Important distinction, not so I could fuck my husband, but so somebody could fuck me. My mom, true to her own heterosexuality. So back to the soccer game. 2 months later, I went back to Louisiana, and I was sent to Children's Hospital in New Orleans, and I'm 17 years old still, and I'm given what's called a vaginoplasty, the hole that a man, my husband, can have sex with that didn't exist before because I wasn't born with one. And so they sent me right back to school after that with not so much as a therapist conversation or a meaningful conversation with a doctor or a meaningful conversation with my parents. Lots of isolation, lots of shame, lots of secrecy, which are the ingredients that are necessary if you're going to lie to a child about the way they were born and mistreated. So I was alone in central Illinois, and I started drinking and smoking, and quickly my soccer fitness just was diminished. Diminished. I remember one day I had to be dragged to class, the class that my coach taught. He was a political science professor, and I had to be dragged there because I can't miss his class. My friends, my teammates were humiliated for me. So shortly after that, I transferred to a school in Louisiana, and things didn't get better. They did not get better. They got worse. I drank more. You'd think I was going home, and I would have more people to talk to or more contacts, but that wasn't the case. You know, it's like the old saying about somebody who's, you know, alone in a crowded room. There were lots of people I know, but they did not know me, or I knew. So I went looking for my medical records. I went to the office of the last doctor that I saw. And thanks, Mark. And he gave them to me, and it was just like this stack. It was really thick. And I learned many things. I learned that I was born with a phallus between my legs. It was deemed too small to function as a male penis. I was born with testes. They were undescended. I had XY chromosomes. I was without one iota of female anatomy or female reproductive bits. So why was I raised as a girl? Why? Because no doctor wants to doom a young man to a life with an unsatisfactory penis. And if you're looking for more logic than that, you will be found wanting. I learned that these surgeries happen to kids every day. I learned that they are powered by prejudice and fear and cosmetic satisfaction. I mean, these children, by and large, I'm talking about intersex children, by and large, they are born healthy. And these damaging, irreversible surgeries are performed for the satisfaction and comfort of the parents, for the satisfaction and the comfort of the doctors. I learned that that there was a movement being built. A community was growing in Pocatello, Idaho. No, I'm just kidding. I needed a space where I could go and grow and be seen and talk to people who could have a conversation with me about when terrible things happen to you when you're young, when your parents are afraid you're going to turn out queer, gay or lesbian or bisexual, transgender, when they are afraid of your body, and out of love, not malice, out of love, they try to correct you. Because people always ask me, they say, oh, what's your relationship like with your parents? I don't know two parents that love their kids more than mine. So I made my way to San Francisco and became an advocate. I met people. I met intersex people. I met academics. I met doctors, sympathetic doctors, asshole doctors. I met dim-witted doctors. There are some doctors who were just not very smart. And I began to speak. I've been given the opportunity to speak all over the world, speak to medical audiences, to academic audiences, to groups of intersex people. Intersex parents of intersex kids especially are really important because they want to see what their kid's going to turn into. How is my kid going to develop if I decide to have this altering surgery? Some of the best conversations I've ever had. So at some point, my professional travels took me to a conference where I met a woman from Montana. And I fell in love with her. And on my first trip to Missoula, I fell in love with it too. I've been here since October, and really all I can feel is pride and the real privilege of being a part of your community. And I thank you for it. And there should be halftime as the Grizz in Syracuse right now. So I'll wrap it up. Thank you very much, Mark.
Tell Us Something would like to thank the bookstore at the University of Montana, a local bookstore serving the students, staff, and faculty of the University of Montana, as well as the general Missoula community, montanabookstore.com. The Top Hat, regularly bringing Missoula great live music, now with food, tophatlounge.com. Fact and Fiction, where books, authors, ideas, and readers interact, factandfictionbooks.com. Jonathan Marquise, illustrator, artist, and community organizer, jonathanmarquise.com, that's Marquise with a Q. Matt LaRubio, screen printing done right, mlarubio@gmail.com. Rockin' Rudy's, your source for funky gifts, cards, and music. Great people, great music, rockinrudy's.com. Thanks to Cash for Junkers, who provided the music for the podcast. Find them at cashforjunkersmusic.com. Find us on twitter.com/PSSTTELLUS. That's twitter.com/tellus. Also on Facebook and at tellussomething.org. Interested in telling a story? Call 406-203-4683 or email tellussomething@gmail.com. That's PSSTTELLUS.something@gmail.com to pitch your story. Tell Us Something is a quarterly event. Everyone has a story. What's yours? Thanks for listening.